Welcome to Jaguars Monday.
Jaguars Monday.
Jaguars Monday. With your host, Jaguars.com senior editor Vic Ketchman. Jaguars Monday on News Talk Radio WOKV is brought to you by Community First Credit Union, Prudential Network Realty, the Jacksonville Transportation Group, Baptist Health, and by Ticket Exchange. Now, here's your host, the always happy, always positive, always effervescent, man of a thousand smiles, Vic Ketchman.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Jaguars Monday. Yes, smiles abound today because the Jaguars have slain the mighty Kansas City Chiefs, thrashed them like the dog they are. Hey, seriously, I detect, and I have detected all day, a serious good feeling in this building. And it's not because, solely because the Jaguars defeated the Kansas City Chiefs. I know everybody is, or a lot of people are mocking the Jaguars' 4-4 record because three of the defeats have come against, Tennessee when they were winless, the Rams when they were winless, and the Chiefs who had one win and should have been winless. Yes, I understand that, but I sense something is happening. I sense that a young team is getting better. I sense that rookies are on the verge, are nearing the point when they are no longer rookies. And I don't mean in a chronological kind of way. I sense that Eugene Monroe and Eben Britton are becoming better players than you would expect of rookies. Certainly Terrence Knighton has been a better player than you would expect of a rookie since day one. Derek Cox is now a guy teams are staying away from. I sensed yesterday a point where the Chiefs where Matt Castle was literally afraid of going after both corners, not just Rasheem Mathis, but Derek Cox too, and was working the checkdowns. Was going after the linebackers, as so many teams have done this year, by the way. But anyhow, I get this feeling, and I get it from Jack Del Rio, 2 days in a row in press conferences, and I don't think it's the case of a coach riding the crest of an inspiring, uplifting victory, because it's not as though the Jaguars beat the Vikings or the Colts or the Saints are one of the top teams in the league. I think the coach knows that his team defeated yesterday is one of the bottom feeders of the league. But I also think the coach is sensing that his young team is on the way up, and maybe, just maybe, it can make something more of this season, other than a training device, other than a bicycle with training wheels on it, and hopefully by the end of the year you can take the training wheels off and ride into the off season. No, I'm getting the feeling that something is growing here. And if it is, it is going to rest on, in my opinion, this Sunday's outcome in New York. 4-4 Jets, 4-4 Jaguars, who are positioned behind two teams in the AFC wildcard race who have fewer than four losses. That's it. There are only two teams in the AFC wildcard race, whether it's Pittsburgh or Cincinnati. One would likely have to be, let's say one is the division champion and then the other one becomes the wild card. Although Baltimore's certainly not out of it, but one of those two teams has, is should be considered in the wild card race, and then of course the Chargers are the other team in the AFC wild card race who has fewer than four defeats. So from a standpoint of the race, quote unquote, a lot of teams are in it, and the Jaguars are one of them. but they have to win in New York. I think that's the given here. You have to beat the Jets, the 4-4 Jets, because if you don't, not only do you fall behind the pace of the others, but you then fall behind them in the tiebreakers. You know, at that point, then you're starting to really lose ground. But what the heck? It's not my expectation that the Jaguars will be a playoff contender or a playoff team this year. It's never been my expectation. It still isn't my expectation. But that doesn't mean that we can't hope. I can tell you, for me, to have a team I'm covering in a playoff race in December sure makes it fun. Sure makes it, the longer you can stay in this thing, the easier it is to write these stories, the easier it is to cover these games, the easier it is to get yourself up for them, to have interest. So that's my hope. My hope is that the Jaguars will win Sunday in New York and give this season some legs. Give this season some real hope, and I'm sensing that today. I don't know what it is, but I've done this for a long time. I have a reporter's instinct, and I'm sensing that this team is on the come. And, of course, you are invited this evening to give me your opinions on this and all other subjects pertaining to the Jaguars. If you want to talk about yesterday's game, great. If you want to talk about this week's game against the Jets, fine. If you want to talk about something else pertaining to the Jaguars or anything pertaining to the NFL, give me a call, and we'll start our evening's battery of phone calls with Trevor in Montreal. And Trevor, of course, is a weekly caller, so I'm sure he has something good for us. Trevor, how are you?
Pretty good, Vic. How you doing?
Good.
Well, first off, I wanted to congratulate you because you got to see the defense set up in a 4-3.
Yeah, I thought it was coming, and it did.
And I guess I just wanted to know how effective you thought it was, and I just wanted your thoughts on how you thought Derek Harvey did with his hands down.
Okay, good questions. The second question is one I asked of Jack Del Rio at his press conference today. I asked him how Quentin Groves and Derek Harvey played on Sunday. And let's not forget that these two guys were drafted 1-2 in 2008, and a lot of draft picks were spent to trade up to draft each of these guys. And they were drafted 1-2 with the idea that they would be the Jaguars' pass rush of the future. And we haven't seen them on the field together at the defensive end positions a lot. We did yesterday. And they have no sacks to show for it. They didn't distinguish themselves as Darryl Smith and John Henderson did, as Terrence Knighton did. I mean, there's three guys yesterday who had killer games. Reggie Nelson had a good game, too. Rasheem Mathis clearly had a good game. Jack Del Rio's response on Derek Harvey was that he was a force against the run, and he was part of the pass rush. He was there. He was hanging around. He was helping out. Okay, that's fine. But as I have said before, Derek, when you're the eighth pick of the draft, you have to show up on the stat sheet. You've got to have sacks and forced fumbles and fumble recoveries and tackles for loss and passes defensed, which in his case would be passes knocked down at the line of scrimmage, and he has none of that. He doesn't even appear on the stat sheet, and that is concerning. For a guy in his playmaker position of blindside pass rusher, although Quentin Groves was primarily the blindside pass rusher yesterday, but for a guy in his position, he's got to be on the stat sheet, and he wasn't, so I'm not satisfied with what he did yesterday. Groves had three tackles. He did figure prominently into that one little misdirection pitch that they ran on third and short early in the game, and he had enough speed to get out there and foil that play. Didn't make the tackle, but he's the guy who screwed it up. Quentin Groves did. All right, so that's a good thing. Again, he was drafted. Both of these guys were drafted to be the Jaguars' pass rush of the future, and they have yet to step into that future, and that's not a good thing. As far as the 4-3 is concerned, I think that was your first question. I'm fine with what I saw, and I like it better than the 3-4, and it's not because of the defensive ends. It's because of the linebackers. These linebackers don't fit in the 3-4. There aren't enough of them, and they're just not 3-4 types. They're not rangy guys. These are what I call pluggers, thumpers. They're step-up, step-back guys. They're not sideline-to-sideline guys. I felt that they appeared to be much more comfortable with an extra 300 pounds of lineman in front of them, helping to strip the interference and keep the blockers off them. Okay, Trevor?
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thanks a lot, Vic.
Sure. And we're going to take a break, and then when we come back, we'll talk to Michael.
All right, phones are starting to light up. You want to talk to Vic, easy to do. 355-NFL-1. That's 355-6351. If you're calling from outside the area, maybe Canada or wherever, 1-800-355-NFL-1. Jaguars fans enter to win $50,000 towards your new home with Prudential Network Realty's Take It to the House drawing. One winner will be chosen from each home game, and you and a guest could win tickets, a parking pass, and a chance to win $50,000. Just log on to PrudentialNetworkRealty.com for all the details. Jaguars Monday returns right here on Newstalk Radio WOKV. Welcome back to Jaguars Monday, starring Vic Ketchman. Not to talk to Vic. Dow. Nothing funny about that at all. Nothing at all.
Oh, no.
The soothsayer of all sports. 355-NFL-1 is the number. Yeah, exactly. 1-800-355-NFL-1. Of course, the Jaguars Rewards Program is your ticket to discounts and savings from a bunch of Jaguars merchants who are right here in the area. Save on things like Jags gear to money-saving offers at your favorite restaurants and a whole lot more. Just visit jaguars.com/rewards for all the info, Victor.
If I'm doing a story, if I'm writing a story about a defensive tackle, especially if he's a nose tackle, I got to talk to his position coach. I got to talk to somebody who can tell me how he's playing, because this is a guy who has to be evaluated by the tape, by watching the tape. He's just not going to show up on the stat sheet. He's going to be judged by his ability to have blown up the action inside, to defeat the blocks, hold the point, penetrate. Defensive tackles do things that allow other people to reap the rewards. Defensive ends, however, linebackers, these are guys who are being put into position to make plays, playmakers. And these are guys who have to show up on the stat sheet. Now, I keep hearing Derek Harvey, you know, nice things being said about Derek Harvey. But I got to tell you, folks, I got to see it on the stat sheet. And he doesn't appear on yesterday's stat sheet. And see, that bothers me. Let's go to Michael. Where's Michael? JTB? Oh, he's in his car. Michael, how are you? Good evening.
I'm pretty good. Listen, yesterday I was sitting with some Kansas City fans.
Mm-hmm.
And they, before the game, they told me they have the worst offensive line in the NFL.
It's not good.
And you're just like you're saying, we were nowhere. Nowhere putting any pressure on that quarterback.
No, wait. They got 3 sacks, Michael.
I understand that, but you got to remember these are the worst offensive line in the NFL.
Okay, you're right. No, that you're right. The Chiefs, I think, were 31st in the league in sacks allowed per pass play. A bad offensive line that had allowed 24 sacks, I believe, going into yesterday, and we sort of said, meaning the media and the fans too, that if the Jaguars don't get any sacks, then they're, you know, against this team, then they really stink. But they got 3 sacks and they got a lot of pressure. So I can't come down on them today. They did a pretty good job rushing the passer yesterday, though it was against a bad pass blocking team.
My question is, when in professional sports, if you don't produce, then there's got to be a shakeup.
Okay, ask your real question. Let's not beat around the bush. I don't have time for that crap. Get it out.
Okay.
What do you want to say?
I want to say that we need a major shakeup. We need new blood. We need for our owner to spend some money to get named players, or we're going down the tubes.
Okay, give me a named player.
A named player?
Mm-hmm.
How about trying to find a quarterback in the last 5 years?
But you see, that's not a name. You can't go out back to the quarterback tree.
How about Michael Vick?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, oh, yeah. That's
we
great.
Didn't take Michael Vick because we were so pure. We didn't want any troublemakers on the team.
Yeah.
Well, just look what happened this year. We already had troublemakers on the team.
Okay. Michael, I'm going to cut you off, Michael, because I don't agree with anything you say, and I don't want to get into an argument on the radio because we just don't have the time. If you saw Michael Vick last night, what you saw was a fat, slow, over-the-hill guy. He hasn't done a thing for Philadelphia. He would have been a disaster here for a lot of reasons, one of which is he can't play. The guy is done. I mean, there is nothing to suggest. Joe, you're a Philadelphia Eagles fan. Has he done anything there?
No, I don't. No.
Not a thing. In fact, taking Donovan McNabb out of the game a couple times last night, I thought really screwed up the flow for the Eagles. I think it hurt them, and for absolutely no gain at all. So I want to move on to another caller.
They took him out of the game, set up the Wildcat, and then had him hand it off.
And, you know, one time he ran for 2 yards. I mean, he lost something. In prison, he lost something. He's not the same guy. Let's go to James at the beach. James, good evening.
Vic, how are you?
Great.
I want to say, first off, I appreciate that you really take the time and try to explain to the uneducated people out there how absolutely wrong they are. I got two words for the last caller, Washington Redskins, and see how far going out and spending money on names will get you. But also, I was curious, this was kind of looking ahead, not so much on this year, but as far as talent scouting and college football, do they whisper anything to you on people that they're high on, positions they're high on, people that they may be looking to draft?
No, I mean, first of all, they couldn't do that at this point because they're not even anywhere near that stage. Now, I poke around at combine time, and I try to share that with the readers. And a lot of times they'll say I'm nuts. Well, I can tell you, I gave you several tips last year that Beanie Wells was their guy. I said it, and oh, he stinks. And I'm telling you, if Eugene Monroe hadn't been there, Beanie Wells would have been the pick. A few years before that, I had labeled Darrell Revis as their guy. That they had a trade worked out with the Steelers to go up and get Revis. And somehow the word got out, and the Jets moved up one spot ahead of the Steelers. They traded with, I believe, Carolina and drafted Revis. And, of course, the Jaguars are going to play against him this Sunday. So, you know, around combine time when they – but you got to let these guys get their board together. They've got to get these guys up on the board, get them ranked, and then they see where they're going to be picking and they see where these players fit. Then some stuff starts to leak out. But, you know, we're – eons away from that. These guys are all out on the road now. They're going to these games. They're going to the campuses. They're looking at tape, film at the campuses on these guys. But we're a long way from the from getting tips on who they might draft because as it stands right now, they don't know.
How's your feeling about us running the 4-3? And aside from obviously Darryl Smith having a good game, do you feel like that's going to, because initially you said that John Henderson playing the end in the 3-4 that it seemed to reinvigorate him and get him a little bit more motivated.
Well, that was Jeff who said that. I didn't have a problem with what they, well, yeah, I did. I had a problem with what they were doing up front, and it's that they were using Derek Harvey. They were playing him like a cornerback almost. He was out jamming wide receivers, and you just, I didn't get it. I didn't get it at all. But my real problem was with the linebackers. 3-4 teams have to have 7-8 linebackers on their roster. One year I can remember the Steelers had 10. They had 10 linebackers on. You've got to have a battery of linebackers who are fast, pass rush types, guys who can play in space. The Jaguars don't have that. They not only don't have the numbers, they don't have the types. It just didn't fit. Not to mention the fact they didn't really have two-gapping type defensive linemen, although they got around that because they didn't play a lot of two-gap. It just didn't fit. I think it was obvious. They're out of it. They're out of it for good. Jack Del Rio made that comment today. He said they're not going to go back and forth, tinker with this thing, go back and forth. So it is what it is. It worked yesterday. We'll see what it does this Sunday against, by the way, the number one rush offense in the National Football League. Thanks, James. And with that, we'll take our bottom of the hour break, and we'll be back with the second half hour in about 5 minutes.
All right, Victor. Hey, by the way, following up on James' question, is there anybody that excites you now? coming out of college?
Oh, sure. I'll talk about it. Yeah, you got absolutely. It.
All right, fans, vote for your favorite teacher to be the Community First Credit Union Teacher of the Week. Your teacher could win club seats to a Jaguars home game. That's all part of the First Down Touchdown Teachers. Just visit communityfirstfl.org for all the details. Vic will be back right after this on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Thank you, Jeffrey Hess. And I'm Joe Fortunato, along with Vic Ketchman for Jaguars Monday. Want to get a hold of Vic? You can do it. 355-NFL-1. That's 355-6351 outside the calling area, 1-800-355-NFL-1. This portion of Jaguars Monday is brought to you by Best Buy. Remember to stop by the all-new Best Buy store in the St. John's Town Center. Victor?
I was running that call back through my head, the one about name players. And
Michael Vick is not the name.
Larry Johnson's a name player. He's available. Would you like him? Gee, that would be wonderful to have him on your team. He's such a delightful human being and such a team guy. Albert Haynesworth is a name player. How's that working for the Redskins? Yeah, that's they got to get somebody to take his check out to the car every week.
So you think Larry Johnson's he's got to play somewhere, even if KC decides never to suit him up again.
Wayne Weaver spent $25 million on name players last year. That didn't go very well. Bryce Pop was a name player. I mean, when are we going to get it? When are the fans in this town going to understand that that's the mindset that got this team to where it's at, that the roster had to be gutted and those players had to be replaced by no-name players who had the ability to become name players? Look at the stars. Look at a lot of the stars in the game today. Tom Brady, was he a name player? Is there a better quarterback? Was Ben Roethlisberger a name player? You know, would you put these guys into the same category that you would the Peyton Manning? Now, Peyton Manning is a guy coming out. He was a name. Everybody knew the name. You find football players where you find football players, and money, the salary they earn doesn't guarantee anything, as evidenced by Albert Haynesworth and Larry Johnson.
You don't think Roethlisberger is a name?
Now he is, but not coming out of college.
He's a first-round drafted quarterback.
He was a quarterback of a second-tier college program, Miami of Ohio. All right? Philip Rivers went before him. Eli Manning went before him.
Yeah.
All right? I mean, he wasn't a name guy like a Tim Tebow is. Why is that funny? I mean, Tim Tebow is the name, the preeminent name.
Yes, he is.
In college football. But you don't draft the name. And you don't draft the college. You draft the player and his talent. And we're looking at a rookie class here of Jaguars. Eugene Monroe, Eben Britton, Terrence Knighton, Derek Cox, Mike Thomas. There's your first five picks, and they're all playing, if not starting, in the case of Mike Thomas, all are playing prominent roles. Jarrett Dillard played yesterday. I saw Zach Miller on the field. This is the best rookie crop in the league. Just simply put, this is the best rookie class in the league. How could you possibly complain about the way they're doing things now? In the past, yes, but not now.
Do you consider Mark Sanchez a name before this season?
Well, he was a recognizable name because he was coming out of Southern Cal and he was a quarterback. You know, but there's a difference between, you know, signing Albert Haynesworth after he's established himself as the top defensive lineman in the game, or drafting Albert Haynesworth when, you know, out of college. There's a difference. You're going to pay a lot more for Albert Haynesworth after he's been in the league for 6 years and he's established himself as the top defensive lineman in the league than you would as the 10th, 11th, or 12th pick of the draft, whatever he was. Let's talk to, who's next on the list, Joe? Let's go to John in Mandarin. Good evening, John.
Hey, Vic, how you doing?
Good.
I would just first like to say hey to my buddy, Ben. How you doing? But I wanted to ask you yesterday, or about the game yesterday. I know that the stat sheet isn't going to explode. I mean, he did get three sacks. If Darryl Smith had a great game, that's good.
Yes, he did.
But one thing that I really liked about the defense was it looked like to me the linebackers were disguising their blitzing. They were disguising it very well. I mean, they didn't always make the play, but they were getting in the opportunity in the same area to make a huge play. And they haven't just quite gotten it down to where they make those big plays, but they're in the area. I mean, I think with practice and more experience into it, it can make some really nice things.
Jeff Loggeman is the better source for this. So I'm going to leave this for Jeff for Wednesday's show to give you a technical explanation of what happened yesterday. But I'm going to give you my overview, and my overview is 60 yards rushing allowed is a lot better than 305. Now, again, it was the Chiefs. But before we pronounce anything fixed or written in stone, let's wait at least until we see what they do against the Jets, the number one rushing offense in the league. Let's go to how about John on the west side? Wants to talk about wide receivers. John, good evening.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, how are
you? My question deals with the tiers, the wide receiver corps. Do we have a upper tier, middle tier, lower tier, and what would it take to get us to an upper tier if we don't have the upper tier?
Are you asking me where I think they rank in the league?
Well, the league, yes, and overall for the last, 4 or 5 years.
Okay, first of all, they are leaps and bounds better than anything this team has had since Jimmy Smith was in his prime. They are leaps and bounds better than anything this team has had as a receiving core, certainly in the Jack Del Rio era years. And the difference in this offense this year, and by the way, this offense right now is number 9 in the league in total yards, number 9 in the league in total yards. And I understand that the rush offense is what's driving that number 9, but the pass offense has been kind of prolific at times too. And that's helped it. And in my opinion, the difference is the wide receiving core. They not only have helped the passing game, they've helped the running game. This team has 12 plays of 30 yards or more through the first 8 games. That is the most 30-yard plays through 8 games, I think, in Jaguars history. It's in my story from yesterday, in the game story that appears on the site still. It was either in Jaguars history or in the Jack Del Rio era. And either way, it's good. I mean, this team has explosiveness to it now. This offense is making big plays, as evidenced by the 61-yard touchdown catch and, pass and catch and run by 61 yards by Mike Sims-Walker yesterday. This team is making big plays in the passing game. You weren't going to see that from Matt Jones or Reggie Williams. That wasn't going to happen. I mean, do you know Matt Jones's yards after the catch, run after the catch last year, do you know what it was, his average? It's just incredible. I saw this at the end of the year, and my mouth dropped open. I still can't believe it, but it is, in fact, the truth. 1.1 yards after the catch average, Matt Jones last year. And this was a guy you drafted with this hillbilly music in mind, you know? We put out this tape with this hillbilly song in there, and the guy's running all over the field. He ran 1.1 yards. He couldn't go more than 1.1 yards. Right? That's what he did on the average. Now you got a guy like Mike Thomas, Mike Sims-Walker, who can do something with the ball after they catch it. So where do I think the Jaguars' receiving corps ranks? I still think it's middle of the league. But that's a heck of a lot better than bottom of the league, which is what it was last year. That last year's receiving corps was the worst in the league, and it was the worst I have ever covered. This one's in the middle. Break time.
Hey, even Torrey Holt will do something with the ball after the catch.
More than 1.1.
Fans, nobody helps you get ready for a game day better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and a whole lot more. Stop by Gate today and give Vic Ketchman a call today. 355-NFL1. 1-800-355-NFL1. Jaguars Monday continues right here on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Welcome back to Jaguars Monday on your flagship station for Jaguars football, News Talk Radio, WOKV. Fans, your chance to get free Jaguars merchandise is real easy. Just make JaguarSearch.com your new online search engine. Every search is a chance to win digital dollars that can be redeemed for great prizes. JaguarSearch.com. Victor?
We've got 10 minutes to go. We got some phone calls I'd like to get on the air. Let's start with Mike, who's on his cell phone. Good evening, Mike.
Hi, Vic. Thanks for taking my call. I'd like to ask a question, and I would like to make a comment if I could.
Mm-hmm.
I looked on the website. I couldn't find any information about why Eric Landry was inactive for yesterday's game.
Why do you think he was inactive?
I don't know.
I mean, isn't it obvious? Because they wanted somebody else to be active.
Well, do you know who they put in instead? Or I'm assuming they made room for somebody, but I don't know who.
I've got it here. Hold on. I've got it here. Okay. The active defensive linemen were Groves Harvey, Henderson Knighton. Montavious Stanley, Atiya Ellison, and Julius Williams. Those were your three. In addition to the starting defensive lineman, Julius Williams, defensive end, and defensive tackles Montavious Stanley and Atiya Ellison were the other three active defensive linemen. So what that means is that Derek Landry is behind those three guys, or was on this particular day, behind those three guys on the pecking order.
Okay. All right. Appreciate that information. And then my comment was is simply this. I was in St. Louis back in the 80s when the Cardinals left St. Louis. And I guess I'd just like to say to, and I know that Jacksonville is a little bit different situation, but there's really no worse feeling than losing an NFL team in what that does to the psyche of a city.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping that, and watching Bill Bidwell and the way he handled that team and what he fielded during those years and looking at what Wayne Weaver does, two completely different stories. And my hope would be that Jacksonville would take this as a very serious issue and any way they can support this team, because in my observations, Wayne Weaver's done and is doing everything he can to make a very competitive NFL town here and something that Jacksonville can be proud of. And I just hope that those who can go. I was at the game yesterday, and it was difficult to watch that many seats be open in an NFL town.
Oh, no, it hurt. And it's hurting me, Mike. I've been here since the beginning. And I've got a picture on my study on the wall in my study at home. I've got a frame picture, a big frame picture of an overhead shot of this stadium on opening day, September the 3rd, 1995, Jaguars and Houston Oilers. And, you know, no covers on the seats and places packed. And it was a hot day, and I was a lot younger, and I was in an exciting new place. And I come in every day. I walk into the study, and I see that picture, and something goes through me. It alerts something inside me. Number one, it tells me I'm getting older, getting old. It also tells me that feeling of that day is gone. I sat there Sunday and I looked around the stadium and my heart, I can literally feel my heart pound, because I can feel this thing going away. You'd have to be an idiot to think that everything is fine. everything is not fine. I covered a game in St. Louis at the very end. I covered one in Baltimore in the last year that the Colts were in Baltimore. And I mean, you could feel it. You could feel that they were losing the team, but they were losing it for a different reason. Those were stadium issues. The Rams left Los Angeles because of a stadium issue. The Browns left Cleveland because of a stadium issue. The Oilers left Houston because of a stadium issue. The Cardinals left St. Louis because of a stadium issue. The Colts left Baltimore because of a stadium issue, et cetera, et cetera. The last team to leave a town in the National Football League because of attendance problems, not because of a stadium problem, but because of attendance problems, per my calculations, was the 1952 Dallas Texans. I'll bet you didn't even know there was a 1952 Dallas Texans team. Before there was a Dallas Cowboys, there was a Dallas Texans. And they had to be moved to Hershey, Pennsylvania at midseason because they weren't drawing anybody and the financial losses were becoming too great. They were moved to Hershey at midseason, and at the end of the year, they were moved to Baltimore where they became the Baltimore Colts. Okay? And that's what's happening here. There's no stadium issue in Jacksonville. This isn't a stadium issue. This is an attendance issue. Pure and simple and plain attendance issue. Let me go to Leopold at the beach, who wants to talk about the upcoming game against the Jets. Good evening, Leopold. You got to be quick. We're running out of time.
Hey, Vic. I just wanted to know what would be the Jaguar game plan towards the Jets on the offensive side of the ball, how they'll approach this game.
You're going to see more of what they tried to do and did against Kansas City. You're going to see them try to run the heck out of it. The Jets have they got a cornerback, Darrell Revis, that cuts the field in half. You don't test him, and most teams don't test him. You stay away from him. And when you're playing against a team that cuts the field in half, man, they are at a significant advantage. And against teams like that, you want to run the football. You also want to run the football against the Jets because Mark Sanchez, being a rookie quarterback, he's not likely to light you up. They're not going to run away and hide. You shouldn't have to get drawn into a high-tempo game against the Jets. They're the number one rushing team in the league. They're going to pound the rock. And because they're going to do that, they're going to allow you to do the same. It should be a close, hard-fought game right to the finish. I don't think you're going to run away from them, and I don't think they're going to run away from you. This is probably going to be old-fashioned slug-it-out football in November in the Northeast. I'm really looking forward to it, Leopold. Do we have time for one more, or is that it?
Gots to go.
Gots to go. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Victor.
You make it easy every week.
Oh, you're so easy to work with because you're the man of a thousand smiles.
Yes, I am.
Don't forget, Vic will be back on Wednesday with Jaguars This Week, along with Brian Sexton and Jeff Lagerman. Brian will be here tomorrow talking to the coach right here on News Talk Radio WOKV. So join us then. Good night, everybody.
You've been listening to Jaguars Monday with Vic Ketchman, brought to you by Prudential Network Realty. This is AM 690 and 106.5 FM. News Talk Radio, WOKV.